नमो तस्सा भगवतो अरहतो सम्मा सम्बुद्धस्स नमो तस्सा भगवतो अरहतो सम्मा सम्बुद्धस्स नमो तस्सा भगवतो अरहतो सम्मा सम्बुद्धस्स बुद्धं धम्मं संघं नमस्सामि। So I'd like to reflect on Buddhism today. Actually, I'd like to run outside in the springtime. I'm glad to see so many people at the monastery again. We've been diligently doing solitude practice for the last 3 months. It's an important part of our monastic training is to learn how to be alone without structures and without routines. And that being alone is very much dependent on the generosity of the lay people. So if all of you didn't support us, we wouldn't have this opportunity. So we're very grateful that you make it possible for us to do that. So our training is, as monastics is for 8, 9 months of the year is very communal. Breakfast together, lunch together, different people coming through, routines. Morning pujas, evening pujas, and so there's a learning there to learn how to be mindful within a group of people, and then the solitude is very different too, to be mindful within a situation where that you don't even have to come for the meal if you don't want to, and most of the monks are just doing one meal a day, so they come in for the meal, have a shower, and go back to the kuti. So the whole day has no structure. And that's very much an important part of forest monasticism, is to learn how to develop your own meditation, your own capacity to study, your own capacity to be with yourself and understand yourself without the support of the teacher or the group. And what often happens is that there's a sort of adjustment period in the solitude. Monks feel restless. There's no work projects. Maybe they want to check out their emails, but you can't do that. And then they get settled into that. And then they quite like it. And then community life starts again. And then there's a resistance to that. Like, oh gosh, morning meditation again. And so the way Ajahn Chah set up the Wapapong in the monasteries was to see yourself in all these different contexts, with people, without people. But obviously our life is very simple compared to the complexities of working in a bank or working with different kinds of people. So it's still very simple. I'd like to reflect on perception today. The way I read Buddhism is I see the teachings coming through sort of two domains, and those two domains are underpinned by two different ways of perceiving who we are in the world. So perception is an important part of Buddhist psychology, or the Buddhist way of defining our conscious experience. And the word we have in the five khandhas formulation, for those of you familiar, sanya, perception. And perception is one of the building blocks of the way we interpret life, don't we? You see the car and the bus, you know the difference. You see a spoon and a knife. You see a glass and a Kleenex box. So our life is, our capacity to function is built up of all these little building blocks of perception built upon memory. Perceptions become complicated sometimes. So like perceptions of people are very complicated. Your perception of Ajahn Viradhammo, for each of you it's different. It's different than say what my brother has, perception of me. Or if someone sees me in the airport, they don't know who I am, they would have a different perception. If I've If I've been unkind to you, you have a different perception. If I'm kind to you, you have a different perception. So although we use the convention, Ajahn Viradhammo, as one word, for each of us, it's a different experience. Right? It's a perception, and perception is an experience, the way I interpret life, the way I see life. The deer here, for most people, the deer are very cute. For me, they're full of ticks. Right? So I see the deer, I think, you guys are cute, but I wish you'd go feed somewhere else. Right? And that's a perception which isn't wrong, but someone else who's coming from the city doesn't see a wild animal, it's absolutely delightful. And I find it delightful too, not that I don't, it's a mixture. So the way we interpret the world is, it seems like the same world, but it is a different world, isn't it? It's a very personal world in some way, but it's also a very common world. We live in the same place, but we interpret it differently. And that's just normal. And if we didn't have proper kind of perceptual equipment, we'd have dementia. You know, if I was like that. Oliver Sacks' book, The Man Who Mistook His Wife for a Hat. I don't know if you've read that. It was very interesting. Really totally warped perceptions. Sanya perception. So, say like this bell. It's a bell, isn't it? Is it a bell? Seems like a bell. When I first saw it, I thought it was a bowl. Right? It looks like a bowl, shaped like a bowl. If I put it in the kitchen, and you were sort of artistic, then well, I think I'll put the oranges in there, that'll look really good. Be a fruit bowl. But both are right. You know, it's not like one is... And they're not mutually exclusive either, are they? You do that way. But if I was a Tibetan, maybe this is my party trick. If I was a Tibetan, maybe... Maybe I'd see it as a musical instrument, right? And that wouldn't be wrong either. If I was terribly holy and I found someone emptying the dirty water from the flower vase in here, you can't do that, that's sacred. So my perception now of the bowl would be it's sacred and you can only use it for one reason. And if you were a monk, I'd probably lay into you. But if you're a little kid, I'd say, oh, how sweet. So our world is kind of built up on all these different definitions and structures. And what I've been pondering recently is that in the teachings of the Buddha, you get this seeming contradiction if you look carefully at teaching. So you have something like, I am of the nature to age, I have not gone beyond aging. I am of the nature to seek and have jara damomi charanatito. I am of the nature to seek and have not gone beyond sickness. I am of the nature to die, have not gone beyond dying. Okay, so we chant that, don't we? Most of you know that chant. But then also we have the body is not self. This is not me, not mine. So have you ever pondered that? How can you have both? How can you have one statement which is saying, I'm of the nature to die, I have not gone beyond dying, and another statement is that the body has, there's no self in the body. Have you ever pondered that? It is a contradiction, isn't it? It seems a contradiction. Well, the way to kind of consider that is that in the teachings that we're offered, there's what we call the convention of a person in society, the convention of a person in their family structures and their social responsibilities and so on. And that's the convention that we, as bhikkhus, we call Vinaya. It's the monastic convention. I am Ajahn Viradhammo, and I am a senior monk here, and other monks are junior to me, and I have certain rules that I live by, and if I break those rules, I need to acknowledge that, and if I seriously break the rules, I have to disrobe. So there's the sense of self, and so there's the perception that I am this body, I am this person living in these social relationships. I should take doxycycline if I see a tick bite me. I should take my anti-cholesterol medicine and more magnesium, right? And I prefer coffee with milk as opposed to black coffee, ta-ta-ta-ta-ta. We can go on and on and on. So that's me. Viradhamma, I'm 68 years old. I was born in Germany, and you know my bio. So that's what we call the conventional perception. And it's true, it's not wrong. It's true in some sense. And that way of perceiving yourself as a being in society is where we practice dana, sila, right livelihood, right action, right speech. All those aspects where personal responsibility is terribly important is what we mean by the conventional self or the conventional perception of me as a person. So conventionally, then, I'm sitting here, and you're sitting there. I can see your face. I can't see my own face. The door is over there. Kosala's sitting over there. If I want to shut the door, I have to go over there. That's conventional reality, right? And that's important in terms of living by sila. So keep the five precepts. As a monk, I keep my precepts and so on. And that's where we think about jara dhammo, that I am of the nature to die. This body is of the nature to die. Now the other way of perceiving, and that's where the liberating teachings come from, the other way of perceiving is this, all this activity, even the perception of me sitting here and you sitting there, is happening in awareness. This is the other way to perceive it. And this is the way we don't usually perceive things. We usually just take the first perception. I've got a sore throat, I better go to the doctor. I'm not sure what I should do. Maybe I should do this, maybe I should do that. The sense of self is very strong, and that's our usual way we function. But there is this other way of perceiving, which is more subtle, and we don't usually employ that. That the very perception that I'm, even my hand now moving in front of me, even the feeling of my body is in awareness. That the depth perception, that the sound is outside, that the fan is above me, is something that's happening in awareness. Well, we usually don't perceive that way, but it's also true if you allow yourself to entertain that perception. This is happening in awareness. So just as I can entertain the perception that could be a fruit bowl or it could be a bell, I can change my perspective on it. That's easy, right? But the other one, this is happening in awareness, that's a kind of foreign one. But the teachings that liberate your mind are not the teachings which embed you in self-identity with this body. Because this body is bound for death. The identity with your perceptions, with your views and opinions, those kinds of things. So I say politics, very passionate stuff. People will, like if I said Mr. Harper or Justin Trudeau, you know, each of us might have a different view on it. And our identities become very much with those views and opinions that people argue, political, religious, economic arguments to have, or arguments about the suttas, arguments about whatever. So there's a kind of strong identity with perceptions, opinions, body, family, culture, all these different things, very strong identity with that. And the teaching of liberation is saying, live the conventional life well, because if you don't live it well, you're going to be so confused. You'd just be so confused. So live it well, but that's not your ultimate identity. You're not ultimately a 68-year-old man. You're not ultimately a 58-year-old woman. You're not ultimately a Sri Lankan or a Canadian. You're none of those. That those are perceptions and feelings and bodily things that arise and cease in awareness. So take something like gender identity. Obviously, I don't experience life through a woman's body. My experience of life is through a male body. But maleness is something that happens in awareness. Right? Maleness happens in awareness. But awareness has no gender. You can't say that awareness is male or female or something in between. It knows maleness as maleness. It knows femaleness as femaleness. So as human beings, we have our characteristics or the conventional realm that we live in is individual. There is individuality for sure. It's not like one massive porridge. We all have preferences of fashion and color and food and needs and so on and so forth. But all of that takes place in awareness. It takes place in awareness. And that perspective is the perspective of non-grasping, of non-attachment. The perspective of keeping sila, being socially responsible, taking care of the forests, taking care of people so they don't get ticks or whatever, is part of that social responsibility. And that's how I live my life. I try to live my life according to values which are compassionate, which are sensitive, which are generous. And that is, as I always say, that's the method. That's the foundation. That's the way you live your life with the least amount of harm for yourself and others. And that creates the possibility for the mind having enough stability to take this other perception, that the feeling of love and hate that arises in my mind is in awareness. The feeling of like and dislike is in awareness. Now, taking refuge in awareness rather than taking refuge in the definition of the bell or the longevity of the bell or the body or my perceptions or whatever is a true refuge because it's not dependent. The experiences we have is dependent on awareness and consciousness. You can't have them without it. But awareness is not dependent on the bell. It's not dependent on your body. Your body can feel all kinds of things. You can feel really painful or happy or whatever. And so we begin to, as you live this practice, you begin to intuit, well, wait a minute. What, you know, where is the real freedom? Is it really in my views and opinions? And how many of us have been burnt by that? My judgments about myself or others? Whatever. Is there any real freedom or refuge in that? And so the practice of seeing that this other perception, that the sense of a self arises and ceases in awareness, is something we try to do. And what we try to do there is to notice, like, the very sense of, let's say, you feel, annoyed at someone in the grocery. I always give these same examples to begin with. Anyway, you're in the grocery line and someone cuts in front of you. Okay, so what arises is irritation. Right, irritation arises, and then if you're really aware, if you're really trying to understand how consciousness works, if you're really aware, you'll see that with that irritation, a sense of self arises. Don't they have any manners? Who was their mother anyway? Or whatever you want. Some kind of judgment. And from that sense of self, thought arises. Thinking, you know, gosh, I'm going to tell them. No, I'm going to tell them something. Don't you sit the last time, be an argument. No, I'll tell them something. And this inner argument happens. Right? And that's the whole sense of a self. But if you have enough awareness, you can see that whole argument, that whole inner dialogue and hassle with a person in line is an object in awareness. It's a dynamic object, it's a changing story, but it's in awareness. And when you have that perspective, that it's in awareness, you begin to have what we call non-grasping. Still painful, maybe. Still confusing, maybe. And you still have to act. You still have to live morally and responsibly. And you say something you don't say. You still have to act. It doesn't negate action. It's not a passive thing. But it's a perspective, or it's a perception. It's a perception that this experience is in awareness. And this is what we try to train in our meditation practice, is to develop this other perception in situations where they're not threatening, where they're not confusing, where they're not complicated. So the one I like to do is I just suggest, like, to start meditation, listen to sound, feel your hands. If you do that, listen to sound, feel your hands. Now it seems like the sound is out there and I'm here in my body. But if you just really pay attention, you really just stop being restless and just really focus, and you really feel, there's the sound and there's the feeling in the hands, you'll see that both are in awareness, and that awareness contains both of them. And the feeling of distance is in awareness, and the feeling of the body is in awareness. And the more you do that, you'll see, oh yeah, okay. Even if it's unpleasant, even if it's difficult, complicated, that awareness is a true refuge. It's a different way of interpreting this moment. It's not, the other one isn't wrong. But it's the kind of perspective we tend not to pick up. Because, why? Because we're so enmeshed in our thoughts. We're so sort of driven by our habits and opinions and views and the distractions. So we tend to be distracted. So we're not available to peace. We're not available to the deep silence of the mind. Why? Because our attention always is on the objective world, through a me and the other. So this isn't like negating the objective world. It's taking a perspective more like space. That forms are in space. That there is the space in the room and there's the forms. That there's consciousness and there's the activity in consciousness. That there's awareness and there's emotions and perceptions, all that in awareness. And that's something you have to do. You have to make that perception. You have to experiment with that perception. If it's just a belief or a disbelief, it won't, it's just another idea that you have. But to change your perception, you have to actually do it. And this is learning to train the mind in non-grasping or non-attachment. And you do it in little ways. You just do it in little ways. So you're in the grocery line and you're feeling annoyed, and something in you says, oh, annoyance is in awareness. So your reference now is awareness rather than the annoyance. With attachment, your reference is always the annoyance and who I am and who they are, and that's it's suffering. It's suffering. Then you step back. You're in the same line. You don't step anywhere. Figuratively, you step out of that. And then you make a decision. You say something to the person or not. But your decision is no longer driven by this compulsion to always be involved with the objective world. It's not driven by that. It's more conditioned by what's appropriate. Morality. And the more one lives a moral and compassionate life, the more there is a sense of confidence, there's a stability in the mind, and that stability allows one to constantly remember that this is in awareness. This is taking place in awareness. And they're peaceful, very peaceful. The conditions themselves might not be peaceful. They might be jagged, they might be unpleasant, maybe ugly, but awareness is neither ugly nor beautiful. It's neither male nor feminine. Neither male nor female. So it's always here and now. We say the Dhamma is always here and now. So that's the way you can resolve the sense of I'm of the nature to age, I have not gone beyond aging. That's the body. But the Buddha is saying there's more to this than just you're not this body. That's not your real home. It's a function in nature. So who am I? Who am I? And that's not a very easy question. And rather than asking that question, the Buddha suggests just let go. Just let go of your obsession with objects. Just abide as a witness to change. Abide as and see what happens. Try that perception. Just try it out. You don't need a whole bunch of beliefs. Just try it out. See what happens. If you just abide as awareness of change, as a witness to change, what happens? And if you do it, you'll see it does work. It does work. Now, taking that, bringing up that perception, again, it's not just being a good Buddhist and saying, it all changes. This is the difficulty of having a jargon, a Buddhist jargon that we all agree upon. It just becomes something we say because that's what the Buddhists say. Someone dies, you say, oh yes, anicca. Or you get a flat, oh, anicca. But actually, to take a perception and use that, like really, really actively, that's the challenge. That's the challenge. So you're in the line, the grocery line, the person has butted in and they're kind of rude and obnoxious and so on. And then you awaken and say, how does this feel as a changing thing? You're not caught anymore. You see it as a changing movement. That's something dynamic. So the perception of change then is very, very central to Buddhism, not as a Buddhist belief, but rather something you actually do. Just like I perceive this as a musical instrument, or I perceive this. I mean, it's something I have to do. I have to see it in that way. So I perceive that this activity of mind-body experience is in awareness, and that's changing. If you keep doing that, that's the path of peace. It is peace. It is peace. Okay, I'll leave that for your reflection.